Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. We've got snow, so we're covered. Don't worry about us. We're just fine. Not so much sun this week, so some people who believe that they are susceptible to the darkness, they bring out their happy lamps. Most of them are women, and they sit there under the glow of these lamps, and it's a psychological thing. They get all kind of smiley and chipper, and they sing happy songs, even though they can't sing at all. They still sing. Many of them are married to men who are really put off by cheeriness. People of a Norwegian persuasion to have cheery, upbeat people around them in the dark, cold months puts them in a sour mood, and so they pour themselves a couple fingers of bourbon, and they sit down with a good book, and not an inspirational book, but the kind where the hero is walking down a dark alley with broken glass and steam coming up out of the manholes, and then he sees this treacherous dame up in a lighted window up above, and then suddenly out of the shadows appears a big beefy guy in a dark pinstripe suit with a suspicious bulge under his breast pocket, and before you know it, hot lead is flying, and the big guy is down for the count, and the hero looks up at the window, and that treacherous woman has disappeared, but he knows that he's going to see her again very soon when he least expects it. That kind of a book, you know, not a happy lamp kind of a book. Clint and Irene Bunsen had a big party here on Tuesday night. It was the only night that was really clear of church stuff, and so they held a big party, and it was some party, even though they had just had a major argument right before people started to come. The argument was about whether they should call up people and tell them not to come because there was dense fog in Lake Wobegon, and the roads were slippery, and it just seemed treacherous. And Clint said, "How would you feel if somebody died trying to come to our party?" Well, she'd just gone to all the trouble of making the meatballs and the jalapeno peppers, poppers, and the cheese ball and the shrimp and the ham and artillery punch, which you only do at Christmas time, and you resolve you never will do again. It's a powerful drink. You had 2 quarts of whiskey and 2 pints of rum and a pint each of gin and brandy and some Benedictine and 2 whole bottles of red wine and some orange juice, and you had some lemon juice and a couple quarts of strong tea, and then there's sugar and lemon twists and so on. You put it in a big punch bowl with a big block of ice in the middle, and it's so good. I mean, people come and they drink more than they think they did because you serve it in cups, like teacups, you know, and as it ran down, Irene just kept pouring more whiskey and more, and she forgot about the recipe. It just got stronger and stronger and stronger. Pastor Liz came with a gentleman friend, and of course that lent a little drama to the whole evening. His name was Irvin. He had a beard. He was older. He had a plaid flannel shirt and tweed jacket, and he wore Red Wing boots, and she didn't say anything about him. People watched them closely. Our pastor with a man. They weren't holding hands, but they seemed to really like each other. She didn't say where they met or how they met or who he was to her, but she'd been invited to bring a guest, and there he was, and he was rather charming. Viola Torres, the town clerk, said that she thought he had recently done time in prison for selling space in a cemetery, mausoleum, actually, a columbarium space that did not exist, and he had been sent to prison for that, but she wasn't sure. Pastor Liz put her arm around him at one point, and people tried not to stare. They all kind of looked away, but they kept the corner of their eye on her, and he kind of leaned in close to her, and their cheeks touched, the ones on their face. And this was after the Bunsen dog had gotten into the ant poison, and it was in the pantry, and all of the camaraderie and the jolliness and all, the dog somehow got into the ant poison, and Clint fed her this ipecac and stood out in the snow with the dog waiting for her to vomit, and while he did, he could see through the window into the dining room where Carl Krebsbach put his arms around Irene, Clint's wife Irene, put his arms around her, and he kissed her on the lips longer than was really necessary. It just seemed excessive. They had been playing charades inside, and Carl had been kind of floundering around on the floor trying to mime something, and then she guessed it, and he kissed her, and Clint didn't know what to think. The dog sat there looking up at Clint and not vomiting, and some people were dancing, and he could hear people in the kitchen. There were a few people in the kitchen, bless their hearts, amidst all of this, and they were singing Christmas carols. There were just a few of them leaning against the counter. He could see them over there.
O come, all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. O come ye, O come ye to Bethlehem. Come and behold Him, born the King of angels. O come, let us adore Him. O come, let us adore Him. O come, let us adore Him. Christ the Lord.
He was waiting out there about 20 minutes for that dog to throw up, and then Marilyn Tollerud saw him out there shivering, and she came out. She brought a quilt out with her, and she put that around his shoulders, and she gave him a cup of coffee. He would rather have had some artillery punch. But she had brought her Uncle Lloyd, who had some sort of intestinal problems that were exacerbated by the meatballs. He was eating quite a bit, and he was drinking quite a bit of artillery punch, and it just affecting him. He was cutting some real stinkers in there. They just, whoa. People started opening the windows and the doors. He himself did not seem to be aware of this. And Pastor Liz's friend Irvin was a little bit drunk himself. And Clint went in to investigate. And there was Lloyd at the buffet. He was scarfing up meatballs. He just had learned nothing from this. And then he let one. And he was standing right there by the candles. And there was a big whoosh. And he felt this burning feeling in his butt, and he just let out a yelp, and the dog threw up on the carpet right there, and Clint had to scrape that up, and he had to throw that out in the snow, and then he felt a little queasy himself. He went and he stood in the kitchen where the carolers were standing by the sink, and they were singing, "Angels we have heard on high," they were singing.
Angels we have heard on high, sweetly singing o'er the plains and the mountains in reply, echoing their joyous strains.
Maureen could smell her dog's breath. She could tell what had happened. And she sent the dog outside, thinking there was more to come. And Clint looked out and saw the dog out in the snow. The dog had found the paper towel that he had wiped up the vomit on, and she was now eating the vomit and the paper towel. And she threw up again. Came indoors for that, of course, as dogs would. They would want you to see it. And Irene cleaned it up, and she gave him a look, you know, a look as if it had been his fault. She put the dog down in the basement, and she got out the dessert, which was a triple-layer chocolate cake with a kind of a fudge spilling over the frosting. It was a big thing, and she was carrying it in one hand, and she was reaching for the cake cutter, which had slid under the cake there on the plate, and she lost her balance, and it fell top down right there on the kitchen floor. She scooped it up. The five-second rule was in effect, and she picked the pieces of dog hair right off it and set it out on the table, and people went for it. Irene had the lemon meringue pie. She did not eat the chocolate cake. And meanwhile, Irvin was on his third glass of punch, and he was having a wonderful time. They were playing the Fictionary game, where everybody makes up a definition for an obscure word, and then they vote on which one they believe, and the most persuasive one wins, and he won four in a row. And he was a real charming man. Viola Torres said she was pretty sure he'd done his time down in Oklahoma, and that it was a columbarium, and Clint was wondering if maybe he shouldn't ask this man a few questions. And that was when Irvin stood up and he said, "Well, I got to head out," he said. And everybody, "Oh," they said, "No." And he went around and he shook hands and hugged all of the women. And then he went outside, and Liz followed him outside. And people didn't want to stare at them out the window, but a few people did. And Viola took a good look at him. She said that they didn't kiss. They did not kiss. They sort of squeezed a little bit. He wanted to kiss, but Pastor Liz kind of ducked away, and then she came in again. And then there was a lot of barking down in the basement and animals tearing around down there. And Clint went down the basement, and the dog was chasing a raccoon who had gotten in. And Clint went over and he propped open the basement window that the raccoon had come in, and he went upstairs, and the raccoon took off out the window, and the dog somehow got up and got out the window himself. It was quite a leap for that old dog, and they took off. And Irene said, "You know, I think the furnace went out," and it had, so Clint had to light it. And while he was down there, I mean, it's no easy task. He's had to hold that ignition button there, and he could hear those carolers upstairs. It was really lovely, a beautiful song they were singing. "Silent night, holy night, holy came back upstairs. The furnace had come back on. Everybody had left. Irene was upstairs in the bathroom. She was taking a bath. The dog was in the kitchen up on the table eating what was left of the lemon meringue pie. So Clint took him back outside, opened the windows to air the place out. And then it dawned on him what had happened this night of one disaster after another. Pastor Liz's friend Irvin was the Christmas Nissa. He was the Nissa, the evil elf. It's in all of the Norwegian legends about Christmas. This Nissa will visit you and may take human form, probably will. One person is going to come, not necessarily somebody with a beard, and cause all sorts of trouble. Unless you make your ris salaman, your rice pudding, and you put crushed almonds in it. It has to be very creamy. It can't be 2% milk, can't even be whole milk. It has to be heavy cream and half and half. And you make this and you set this outside by your back door. Remember that. Remember that for Christmas Eve. You'll save yourself all sorts of trouble. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.